Good morning, Your Honors. Corey Zerboff, registration number 38750, on behalf of the appellant Paul Page. Your Honor, the underlying case was about my client's request to reform a deed that he granted to the town of Erie back in 1994. The doctrine under which we sought reform is the doctrine of mutual mistake, which is essentially a comparison of two contracts. The theory is that if the deed doesn't match the contract that the sale is based upon, then the deed, by mutual mistake of both parties, then the deed may be reformed to match the intent of the parties. By definition, the doctrine of mutual mistake requires two contracts, the deed itself and the prior agreement to sell the property. In this case, we have a written real estate purchase agreement. We assert that the trial court erred in its interpretation of the real estate purchase agreement, its exhibits, and amendments. And we are requesting a de novo review of the court's interpretation and construction of that contract. If you look at the purchase contract itself, you'll see that it calls for the transfer of land from Mr. Page to the city. Our contention is that Mr. Page intended to sell two parcels of land to the city, and the city intended to acquire two parcels of land. However, the deed has legal descriptions for three parcels of land. And so there must be some disconnect there. If only two were supposed to be transferred, and the deed transfers three, then there's a disconnect. If you look at the purchase contract to see what the parties intended to include in that transfer, you will see in the first page a description of the property to be transferred. And in paragraph one, it says that the property to be conveyed in this contract is first described in Exhibit A. If you go to Exhibit A, there's a map, and the map there is entitled...
Excuse me, counsel, I think it's Exhibit B, isn't it?
Well, Your Honor, there is an Exhibit B, but there's also Exhibit A that comes before Exhibit B and is referenced before Exhibit B in the contract. That is a general description of the property that's being addressed by the contract. And if you go to Exhibit A, it's labeled ownership, right-of-way, and easements. It's important because Exhibit A shows that there are easements intended to be transferred by this agreement.
Let me push back on that a little bit. As I read the contract, it says designated as the blank parcel and the blank parcel, which are described and depicted on the surveyor maps in Exhibit B.
That's true, you're getting ahead of me. If you look at the contract in the final whereas clause on page one, just above paragraph one, it says owner has ownership and possession of certain real property in the project area, said property having been designated and depicted on the map attached here to as Exhibit A. That's where Exhibit A comes in. And that references easements. Then you go to the actual first paragraph property, and it's just what you said, that the property being transferred in fee simple is parcel blank and parcel blank, so two parcels, not three. That paragraph says that the two parcels to be transferred are depicted in Exhibit B. And if you go to Exhibit B, there are, in fact, three parcels to be transferred. So then that brings you to the question, well, which of these three are meant to be in Exhibit, or are meant to be in paragraph one, which is supposed to be in those blanks? But when you read the contract as a whole, you then go to Exhibit C to the contract, and particularly paragraph 10 of Exhibit C, it's on court file page 41, and it has Mr. Page granting to Erie a permanent construction easement to improve the creek banks within Track D. Track D is the piece of property we are saying should not have included in the deed. And because the contract called for a permanent construction easement to be conveyed for Track D, there would be no need to convey a construction easement if B simple title was intended to be conveyed with Track D. If the town was to get tract D, they don't need a construction easement, they own it fee simple, they can do what they want with it. And so, the inclusion of that provision, granting an easement, or asking for easement across tract D, tells any reader of this contract, well, tract D must not have been one of the two parcels intended to be transferred. Tract D is important to my client and to the contract, not only because it wasn't intended to be transferred, but it also is developed land. It has a trailer on a foundation. At the time that this was, in 1994, when the contract was entered into, there was a septic system in place and a well dug on the property. That was improved property with greater value than the other two pieces that were being transferred. If you look at that paragraph 10, it references the trailer. It says, the creek banks of Tract D, is that tract is shown on Exhibit A on the west bank by the existing trailer house. It's clear that the parties were fully aware that there was a trailer on Tract D at the time they entered into this. What's strikingly absent from this agreement is any instruction as to what would happen with that trailer. It's not being transferred. It's not listed as property being transferred under the contract. And there are no instructions for my client to remove the trailer after the sale, which you would expect if the town had intended to get fee title to the real estate that the trailer is sitting on. You would expect to find a provision in the contract saying remove your trailer within 10 days or 2 weeks or a month, or you can leave it there at some rent or some other provision, but some provision saying what would happen with that trailer. It's just not there. It's not there because they didn't intend to transfer in fee simple track D. The trailer indeed still sits there today, and the testimony at trial was the town never mentioned it to Mr. Page, never asked him to remove it, never said a word about it. But getting back to the construction of the contract, the town in its response pointed out that there was an amend extend to the contract, and that the amend extend had the three legal descriptions attached to it. And the town attempts to argue, well, Mr. Page should have known that it was in there at that point when he signed the amend extend because there were three legal descriptions on it. Two points I want to make about that. The mutual mistake doctrine is just that. It's a mistake doctrine. If there was a mistake, there would be no need for the doctrine. And it's not the deed will be reformed so long as the mistake wasn't too egregious or too haphazard. It's if there was a mutual mistake, the deed should be reformed. If you actually look at that amend extend, it's true that there are three parcels described in that amend extend, but on the very first page, the amend extend describes the property as vacant land. So if you look at the opening paragraph of the amend extend, it says the property being transferred is vacant land. That's by asking the court to look at that and construe that portion of the contract. The amend extend is part of the contract that the court interpreted. That inclusion of that language, vacant land, supports our position that only the two parcels that were vacant were intended to be conveyed.
Mr. Zerbal, let me ask you this. Well, we certainly review contracts de novo and to determine their meaning. If the contract is ambiguous, it presents a question of fact for the trial court, correct?
I believe that's right, and we are asserting that the court erred in finding the contract to be ambiguous. We believe, even though there are blanks there, if you read the contract as a whole, it's easy to figure out which pieces of property were intended to be transferred and which were not.
Well, doesn't the court have to take into account the testimony by the defendant's employees concerning the fact that they wanted to acquire all of the property in fee along the channel of the creek, and the testimony that they entered into the subsequent easement agreement 4 years later because of institutional ignorance and those kinds of things?
I want to address 3 points there. First, I don't believe the court should have taken that into account with her finding of ambiguity being an error. If it's unambiguous, you shouldn't be looking beyond, the court should not look beyond the four corners of the contract. Having said that, I don't believe the testimony from the town employees was that the town intended to get it in fee simple all along. I think it was speculation as to what the town was, because the town didn't produce any employees that participated in the negotiation or were around at the time the negotiation took place. They produced current employees who offered speculation as to what the town might have intended.
Well, even so, it's evidence in the record. The evidence was allowed by the trial court. Wasn't it within its province to consider it?
Well, we also believe that that's where we assert, to the extent that this court believes that there was ambiguity and the court was allowed to consider these outside facts, we believe that the court committed clear error in doing so. We believe that the court committed clear error when you had the party who negotiated the contract on behalf of the town testifying that Track D was not intended to be included. You had the testimony of the seller, Mr. Page, who testified that Track D was not to be included. There were no other people testifying as to what was to be included in that document. There were experts put on by the town that looked at it and said, well, it was inconsistent with the other purchases for this to have been just a easement and not fee simple. Well, this was also the only piece of property that was improved. All the other property acquired for this project was vacant land except for this piece. So it's also consistent with how the town treated improved property. Now, in 1998, the town purchased a piece of Track D for consideration for my client, just 4 years later, much closer in time than when the dispute came up in 2011. And that time, the town wasn't acting like it owned the property. In fact, they approached Mr. Page and asked if they could acquire a portion of it, and did, and gave valuable consideration for that. That's not consistent with the belief that the town owned the property. Speculation that the town didn't bother to get a survey or a title review before doing that just supports the fact that the town must have had a very strong belief that Mr. Page owned that property. If they had any doubt at all, certainly before they gave the valuable consideration they did, they could have gone to the courthouse and read the deeds and figured out who owned it.
Mr. Zerberg, is the name of the witness, is it pronounced Fobar?
Charles Fobar, yes.
Didn't Mr. Fobar, although he testified that there was no intent to transfer the parcel where the trailer was located, didn't he in fact include that parcel in his description to the title insurance company?
Well, I don't know that he included that parcel. I think he just took the exhibit B from the contract and gave that to the contract company.
Well, I guess my point, and I don't know that I'm trying to make a point. I'm trying to determine whether or not there was conflicting evidence that the trial court has the discretion to sift through, accept some of it, reject some of it. And I guess my question to you is, aren't we in a difficult position of reviewing the trial court's decision to do just that?
I agree, Your Honor, and I'm certainly not here today to retry the facts of the case or to ask this court to retry in total the facts of the case. Our position, and I want to state this succinctly and then reserve at least my final minute for rebuttal, is that the contract is unambiguous, and the court erred in doing that. There's only one reading of this contract that gives effect to every provision in the contract, and that's ours. To accept the court's interpretation, you've got to throw out the entire sections about reserving a construction easement, and that's not a proper interpretation of the contract. You should not interpret a contract such that some provisions are deemed valid and some invalid without an explanation as to why those would be invalid. And with that, if there are no further questions, I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Marnie Nathan-Closter, bar registration number 34947, and along with me today is J. Andrew Nathan, and it's our privilege to represent the town of Erie today. May it please the court. In this case, Mr. Page seeks to overturn a district court's rational findings of fact, which were issued after a full trial on the merits. In doing so, Mr. Page attempts to reform only one document, a deed that's unambiguous and from more than 17 years ago. Mr. Page, in making this request, ignores that even a cursory review, as he admitted under oath on the witness stand by him or his competent attorney, would have put him on clear notice that he was transferring in fee to the town of Erie three pieces of property, one of which is the disputed piece. Mr. Page makes this request for reformation despite the applicable Colorado case law, which bars reformation when a request is based on one party's lack of due diligence or failure to read the applicable documents. As such, in this matter, the burden is very high for Mr. Page, and it's well described in the leading case of Sigelki, which said, and I quote, "Whenever a party undertakes to avoid the effects of an instrument which he has signed and sealed, he undertakes a task of exceeding difficulty." Today, I'm going to try and focus on the reply that was filed by plaintiff's counsel and some of the arguments set forth today. So let's start with the applicable law, which I believe is clear and undisputed in the cases. And that is, to prove reformation, there must be either a mutual mistake or a unilateral mistake accompanied by fraud or inequitable conduct. You heard plaintiff's counsel acknowledge during oral argument that there is no claim of fraud or inequitable conduct by Erie. So the question is there a mutual mistake? And to have a mutual mistake, there has to be a mistake by both parties, not by one party. And what we have here and what the trial court found was a mistake maybe by Mr. Page, but not a mistake as to the purchase by the town of Erie. Reformation is not appropriate under these specific circumstances, and that's been cited in a number of cases, which is that one party failed to do their due diligence or failed to read the documents. The topics on appeal in this matter are set by Mr. Page and his attorney, not by us. And on pages 23 and 24 of his opening appellate brief, he said there were only two statements in the trial court's order that was the subject of their appeal. And so that I get them right, let me quote to them. The first was the statement that said, the court finds that the mistake here is a unilateral mistake of understanding, and specifically the court finds that the town, since June 30th, 1994, when the deed was signed, believed it owned the property at issue. The second statement referenced in the briefing is the court finds that Erie immediately after the conveyance treated the property as if it owned it. Specifically, the improvements made to the creek banks and to the property itself were done without further consultation with plaintiff. Now, there was a variety of evidence put on at trial that the district court correctly made conclusions and findings about. They were the signed extension document, which Mr. Page admitted that he signed, and which it and its exhibit undeniably referenced three pieces of property being conveyed in fee to the town of Erie. Someone just looking at the document and counting the number of parcels could have confirmed that there were three pieces. There's the deed, which is the key document, because that is the only document for which reform is being sought. It, too, cites to three separate legal descriptions which describe the disputed property.
Well, the property description, correct me if I'm wrong, sets forth a blank in describing the property. It simply says blank parcel and blank parcel.
In the contract, Your Honor, yes, it has a blank parcel and blank parcel, which our position is, and we believe the testimony clearly showed, was intended to refer to the northerly and southerly parcels, which were how they were described in the legal descriptions, showing three separate properties, two comprised of one parcel, one comprised of the other. And there was testimony at trial that that was the intent, and Mr. Page couldn't provide an explanation as to what else should have been in those lines other than those terms. And Mr. Faubert actually acknowledged that while he had no specific recollection of what should be in, it may well have been intended to refer to the northerly and southerly parcels, which are supported by the legal descriptions. The deed, however, Your Honor, has only a reference to the Exhibit A, and that Exhibit A contains three specific legal descriptions, one of which is the disputed property. And Mr. Page admitted that he had a competent attorney at the time, that he was a real estate investor, and had been successful owning over 20 pieces of property at the time, and that a cursory review of that document in and of itself would have put him or a competent attorney on notice that there were three pieces of property being transferred. Therefore, if that was not his intent, he should have raised that as an issue. And some 17 years went by before he raised any question. In addition, as I noted, there's the signed extension that confirms the transfer of three pieces of property. There's the title insurance that by contract Mr. Cage was responsible for obtaining, which clearly shows the transfer of three pieces of property, all in fee. There's no reference to an easement in either the notice to extend or the title insurance or the deed itself. Additionally, there was a variety of other evidence that Erie put forth at the trial, including the fact that work had to have been done on the property by the grant, which was the sole reason for doing the work on the property. That this property, all of the property owned by Mr. Page, was not the only property obtained by Erie as part of this grant and this project, and that all of the other property was also obtained in fee. So giving an easement to one piece of property would have been fully inconsistent with the rest of the transactions involved in this matter.
Ms. Foster, the trailer remained on that parcel for the entire 17 years also?
There was some evidence that it was on there for a period of time, and we couldn't dispute if it was on there the whole period of time. I would note that the assessor's office doesn't show records of it clearly being on there, as Mr. Parker testified at trial. But even so, there was testimony by Ms. Palmer at trial, who is a Town of Erie representative, indicating that it didn't encroach on the creek bank where their focus was, and it didn't inhibit them from doing work. And they have limited staff, as shown by the 1998 transaction, right, where they didn't have the time or the ability to do the due diligence they should have. And because it didn't impact them, it's not uncommon for them not to get into disputes with property owners if they don't have an impact.
Well, they not only didn't get in any dispute with the trailer owner, but they also tried to buy the property again.
So the 1998 transaction, they did obtain some of the property for a second time. There was also other property involved in that 1998 transaction.
Which would indicate that perhaps the Town of Erie also made a mistake about what they bought.
And I think there was a mistake by Erie based on a lack of due diligence. Ms. Palmer indicated that there had been a turnover in the key employees who had been involved in the 1994 transaction. There was a different consultant who was involved in doing the legal descriptions for that 1998 project. And that person didn't go out and pull title, didn't spend the money to do that. And as a result, Mr. Page got some additional benefit that he otherwise wasn't entitled to. But you don't see Erie claiming that there was a mutual mistake and therefore that should be rescinded. No, they took what they did and said it was our mistake for not doing sufficient due diligence, and they moved forward. There was also other property involved, so it wasn't solely this issue. And in all actions after that, including the 2000 annexation, where Erie clearly indicated in the paperwork that it was the owner of the property, the assessor's office confirmed thereafter that Erie is the owner of the property. Erie did the work. Erie continues to maintain that area. So every action it took other than the 1998 transaction clearly showed Erie's intention and belief that it was the owner of three pieces of property. And that was consistent with why Erie needed the property. Going back to this claim of de novo review, we believe the standard is clearly clear error or clearly erroneous. What Mr. Page has argued in those two sections I mentioned that he specifically said frames this case on appeal is that he does not like what the trial court found with respect to findings of fact and credibility. And according to the law, that is a question for clear error or clearly erroneous standard, and it's a very, very high standard for Mr. Page to meet. And we believe he clearly has not met it, that this court issued a rational, well-supported, well-reasoned decision based upon the undisputed case law about reformation and applied her findings of fact, which were supported by the record at trial, and her opinions about credibility to those findings. There was a reference by opposing counsel to this ambiguity in the contract associated with the two blanks, which I think I already mentioned. Clearly the evidence showed the intent was northerly and southerly parcels. Mr. Page could not dispute that, and his own witness, Mr. Faubert, said that may well have been what was intended, and that's consistent with a purchase. There was a reference to the easement, which is in Exhibit C as an attachment to the contract, and I think there's a couple of things to point out about that. One is, again, it's the deed that controls in this matter. It is the deed that they are seeking to reform. There is no reference to an easement or that language in the deed or its attachments. Now, clearly, the language about a permanent construction easement is misplaced. And clearly, this was a document drafted back and forth by parties and committee and could have been more carefully read. But to the extent that Mr. Page truly thought he was giving only an easement, why did he not bring it up in the 4.5 months before he signed the deed, or after he signed the deed, or after he provided the title insurance? He had all of those options, and he didn't do it. Additionally, if he's relying, as it appears opposing counsel is mentioning and saying, he wanted to keep this property and there's some reason for him to want to keep this property, wouldn't you double check as a sophisticated investor with a competent attorney exactly what transpired and whether the blanks in the document that you signed had been filled in and what they'd been filled in with? Additionally, if you are under an obligation to provide a permanent construction easement, wouldn't you give that document? And Mr. Page admits that he has no copy of a construction easement and no specific recollection of giving one. And that's because Erie didn't need one, because it obtained the property in fee as set forth in Exhibits A and B to the contract and in the deed and all of the other related documents.
Counsel, is there any indication in the record as to who actually drafted this contract?
There is some discussion that there was an original contract, which also, by the way, cites to three pieces of property and the northerly and southerly parcels, that Mr. Frobert contends he had some discussion with Mr. Page about, and then the matter was apparently provided to Erie's special counsel on the matter, who completed the process. Mr. Frobert, despite Mr. Page's assertions that he had firsthand knowledge of the final contract, did not. He was not involved in the actual drafting of the final contract or the final discussions. And there's no board minutes even approving him to have been involved in the preliminary discussions. But it appears it was a combination of the town's special counsel and Mr. Page, and to whatever extent his counsel participated in that process.
So no presumption would arise to construe the contract one way or the other?
No, and there's no language that gives them that right. I think it's important to focus, as your honors pointed out, on the extension document, the exhibits A and B to the contract, the unambiguous deed and its attachment, the unambiguous title insurance and its attachments, and the fact that Mr. Page only had two witnesses who testified in support of his position at trial. One of them was himself, and other than reciting the same mantra, right, that I didn't intend to transfer this property, Mr. Page provided no evidence of what Erie's intent was. That's required for a mutual mistake. So they relied on Mr. Frobert to try and provide that information. And Mr. Frobert's testimony about why he thought there wasn't an intent was nothing but speculation, and it was shown to be completely inaccurate. Right? His speculation was, well, we weren't going to do any work, and we didn't do any work, so we didn't need to buy that property in fee. But in reality, he was shown a number of documents, including some of his own written logs from the project, showing that, guess what? Erie did do work, and they did need the property, and they did continue to maintain it. So his speculation wasn't even shown to be accurate. And that's something that the court noted in reaching her credibility decisions and applying the facts as she saw them and as were put forth in the evidence. On the other hand, Mr. Page indicates there were no town witnesses who testified and of any sort of importance, and there were a number of town witnesses, and one in particular was actually present when the work was being done back in 1994 as a town employee, and was the person assigned under the grant documents to be the one responsible for the maintenance, and he said, guess what, we did the work, and we did it on that subject piece of property, and we continued to maintain it. So there was firsthand information provided by town representatives who were present at the time about the work having been performed. There was also information that showed other inconsistencies in Mr. Frobert's statements or Mr. Page's statements. And the assessor's office clearly believes the town of Erie is the owner because it treats it as such and has not been billing, according to our experts' records, Mr. Page for the taxes all of those years. So I think it all boils down to the fact that this is a case about reformation of a deed. There is a high standard to reform that deed. This is a case about a party's unilateral failure to do due diligence or to even read the documents, given that a cursory review would have answered any questions about what he was transferring. And we believe that the court issued a reasonable, appropriate finding and that it should be affirmed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just a few follow-up comments. Again, the standard is not one of negligence. Due diligence is irrelevant. It's whether or not the parties intended to transfer Track D. Charlie Faubert was clear that Track D wasn't supposed to be included. Charlie Faubert was the town's representative in negotiating the contract. He was not ambiguous on that. Yes, he testified that there was work done on Track D, as did another town employee, but that work being done is completely consistent with granting an easement. Nobody's saying the town can't do work to maintain the property. That's what the easement was for. What we're saying is there was not an intent to transmit Track D. One last reference, the original draft contract is in the record at RTR 131. 20 through 137. If you look at paragraph 1 in the original draft, it spells out three parcels. But when they got to the draft to be signed, it was changed to two parcels. I would argue that wasn't an accident. That was intentional. And it was because maybe the town at one point thought they wanted Track D, but when it came right down to it, when Charlie Faubert negotiated with Mr. Page, the decision was made to only get a construction easement and not buy Track D and fee simple. That's why paragraph one between the draft version and the signed version was changed. And if you guys have any more questions, I'll be happy to answer them. Otherwise, I have nothing further. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you both for your arguments today. This case will stand submitted. We will get you a written opinion in due course.